The Convent School, or Early Experiences of a Young Flagellant, Rosa Belinda Coote. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of The Convent School, or Early Experiences of a Young Flagellant. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: The Convent School or Early Experiences of a Young Flagellant. Author: Rosa Belinda Coote. Publisher: William Dugdale. Release date: December 1, 2019. Ebook 60,825. Most recently updated: October 17, 2024. Language: English. Other information and formats: www.gutenberg.org/ebook/60,825. Credits: produced by Doreiter David Wilson and the online distributed proofreading team at http://www.pgdp.net. This file was produced from images generously made available by the Internet Archive, asterisk start of the project GUTMBRG EBOOK The Convent School, or Early Experiences of a Young Flagellant, asterisk. Transcriber's note: this book is pornographic in nature and contains explicit language. 1. The Convent School, or Early Experiences of a Young Flagellant, by Rosa Belinda Coote, London, privately printed, 1898. 3. Decoration: Salomon said in accents mild, spare the rod and spoil the child, be they man or be they maid, whip and wallop 'em. Salomon said, the dicta of the wise man concerning discipline have been the source of inexpressible dolor to children for very many centuries, and it has only been within the last 60 years that ferocity in the treatment of infants, I am speaking of English children, Jean-Jacques Rousseau shamed the French out of the practice of beating their offspring. Nearly 100 years ago has been gradually diminishing. In the 18th century, the lot of the British juvenile was certainly a 4. Cruel one. That admirable woman, the mother of the Wesleys, held that a child should be made to desist from crying and to fear the rod at the mature age of 12 months. And Miss Maria Semple, writing on education in 1812, tells a story of a lady who was educated in early years by a relative. On a certain day in every week, she received corporal chastisement. If she had committed faults, the punishment was due. If she had not, she probably would in the week ensuing. At the distance of more than half a century, the memory of this person who bore a public character of piety and virtue was spoken of, and justly, with aversion by the person she had thus treated. Thus, Miss Maria Semple, G.A.S., in the Illustrated London News. 5. Introductory letter of the authoress. My dear Nelly, since writing you my confessions, in that series of letters which you flattered me by calling most interesting facts and deliciously voluptuous reading for lovers of the rod, the following curious narrative has been entrusted to my confidential keeping by a young countess of my acquaintance. But as there are no secrets between us, and I think it may afford some little pleasure in the perusal, I hasten to copy it out for you. 6. From notes which I made day by day at the bedside of the dear young creature, as she told the particulars to me at my visits during her long and painful illness, now I am afraid close upon a fatal termination. And you may guess how grieved I am to think that, although I now reserve her name as a secret, too solemn to be entrusted even to you, the stillness of the grave will soon do away with all necessity for such reticence. Should my confessions ever be printed after our time, this tale certainly ought to bear them company, either as prefix or addenda. Believe me, dear Nelly, your ever affectionate friend, Rosa Belinda Coote. London, 10th January, 1825. 7. Decoration. The Convent School, or Early Experiences of a Young Flagellant. Chapter: I, the Early Life of Lucille. Since, dear Rosie, you are so interested to hear my birching and whipping experiences, I will try to recollect them as well as possible, but hope you will consider my weak state of health and not press me to tell you too much at once. 8. Perhaps you do not know that almost from my infancy it was arranged that I should marry the Earl of Ellington, who was about 12 years my senior, being a family compact of a purely mercenary character designed to consolidate some very doubtful title deeds, which, now that our union has proved unfruitful, are likely to entail great expense and annoyance to our heirs at law. My father, you know, was the Honorable Mr. Wharton, and my mother died in giving birth to myself, so that I was brought up under a nurse and afterwards went about. 7 years old, a young lady was engaged as governess to instill my juvenile mind with the rudiments of learning, preparatory to being sent to a finishing school. This lady's name was Miss Birch, and although my papa had known her father, Dr. Birch, for some years, I now believe that the fascination of her name had great influence with him in making a selection from the numerous and in many instances more 9 eligible ladies who applied for the situation. Miss Birch was a dark lady about 30 years of age when she entered our family, very good looking, rather large pouting mouth, set off with lovely rows of most pearly white teeth, which, when she smiled or said much, showed to beautiful effect in contrast to her rather swarthy complexion, dark brown eyes, and thick bushy black arching eyebrows. Her figure was well molded and plump, and being about 5'6", she had quite a commanding presence. I was nearly 8 years old before I began to notice the significant looks which occasionally passed between papa and governess, but hints were so often thrown out about the necessity of procuring a good birch rod for the naughty bottom of Lucille that I was gradually awakened to the discovery of some most mysterious kind of understanding which must subsist between them. My infant brain was much puzzled and alarmed as I, 10, already felt in imagination the tingling smart of the green twigs I so much dreaded. Miss Birch seemed more exacting and severe over my lessons, especially when Papa happened to be in the schoolroom. And now, I will tell you my first experience of the rod. One day, after failing both in spelling and arithmetic, she rang the bell and ordered the servant to request Mr. Wharton's presence in the schoolroom for a few minutes. Papa entered with a very serious look, requesting Miss Birch to inform him of the cause of sending for him. "Mr. Wharton," said my governess, "you know we have had many serious conversations about the necessity for proper correction. In case Miss Lucille should continue so inattentive to her studies, today she has failed in everything, and I am certain that, unless her energies are sharpened up by the stinging smart of the rod, she will go from bad to worse. I am so averse to wield the 11 birch myself, and would much prefer that her papa should take in hand the serious whipping she ought to have. Papa. Lucille, you hear what Miss Birch says." I noticed him cast most excited and amorous looks towards the governess as he spoke. "She has been most forbearing with you and interceded with me many times to save your bottom, and even now cannot bring herself to lift her own hand to make you smart a little. It must indeed be a serious fault to induce her to ask me to use the rod, but spare the rod and spoil the child has always been a maxim with me. Lay her across your lap, Miss Birch, and pull up her clothes whilst I get the rod out of the table drawer." Miss Birch, with heaving bosom and quite a deep blush upon her face, "I feel as ashamed at bearing her naughty posteriors as if I was going to suffer the degradation and humiliation myself. But come, Lucille dear, you must bear it, and I hope, 12, you will be a better and more diligent girl in future." Then, catching me by the wrist as I stood by her side covered with confusion, she tried to lay me across her knees, but I struggled and screamed, "No, no, no, I won't be whipped. Oh, oh, dear Papa, do forgive me this time." My face quite crimson and streaming with tears, Papa having got out the rod, a fine switch of long thin birch twigs tied up with velvet and silk ribbons at the handle. "Come, come, Lucille, this resistance will only make it worse for you," as he seized and threw me on the governess lap. Miss Birch, securing my head well under her left arm, speedily pulled up dress and skirts till my fat little bottom was exposed in a tight-fitting pair of drawers, my legs being left to kick about, although I was quite firmly secured, and to all intents quite helpless, and my toes could scarcely touch the ground. 13. I could hear Papa whisking the birch about, and then he said, "That will do famously, Miss Birch. Keep her head and shoulders well down as you hold up her skirts. Much as I pity my darling little Lucille, I must do my duty and make her smart for her idleness in school." My face was burning hot with the deep blushes of shame, and I struggled desperately to free my head from the vice-like pressure of Miss Birch's arm as I begged with piteous sobs to be let off for this once. "Oh, dear Papa, oh, pray don't beat me, Papa. Indeed, I must, though every blow will send a pang to my own heart. You naughty, bad, inattentive girl, all this has come by your great idleness and trusting too much to the kind heart of your governess." As he said this, three sharp stinging cuts whacked on my tight-fitting drawers in quick succession. The pain was intense. I kicked, writhed, and screamed for mercy, mercy. "Oh, 14. Oh, I will be good. Oh, Papa, oh, Miss Birch, do let me go, Papa," in quite an excited tone, for I could see nothing. "So you mean to be good in future, Do you feel the birches doing you good already? Ha, ha, my little Lucille, you must have a little more yet, to make a perfect cure of your idleness. Whack, 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 four more cuts, each one more agonizing than the last, in spite of my sobbing and screaming. Now, Miss Birch, he continued, let her feel it on the bare flesh, open her drawers so we can see the effects of the cuts. This was at once done as I cried, ah, ah, no, no, oh, Papa, how cruel. Papa, what a sight. The rod has made her bottom blush finely. It's best to make her feel sore a few days, or she will soon forget it and relapse into her old ways. The drawers were unbuttoned, and I could feel they were quite pulled down my thighs. 15. Exposing the entire surface of my smarting rump, but I had only a few moments for reflection before the blows fell again in rapid succession, cutting, tearing, and scratching. The skin, whilst the boiling blood in my veins seemed to throb as if it must spurt through the pores at every burning touch of the rod. My head was pressed against the tumultuously heaving bosom of my governess, and notwithstanding the intensity of my suffering, I could plainly hear the beating of her heart and knew that her thighs were tightly compressed together, whilst a strange tremor pervaded her entire frame. There, there, that will do, said Papa in a very excited tone. I've drawn the blood for her. Now, Miss Dunce, kneel and kiss the rod and ask your kind governess to forgive you. I slipped down on my knees and, hiding my face in my hands in her lap, promised Miss Birch if she would forgive me now to be a better girl in future. 16. That will do. I don't want to be too hard upon Lucille this time. We will leave her to think over her disgrace and shame and let her beware of the birch again, said Papa, taking Miss Birch's hand to lead her from the room. This has been a most agitating scene for your governess, who must repose in her private room for a while to recover herself. The schoolroom door, which opened directly into her private room, was closed upon me, and the key turned in the lock, but all my hurts and bruises were insufficient to distract my attention from the peculiarly warm and excited glances which passed from Papa towards my governess, whose face was suffused with blushes and her eyes turned down as if afraid to meet his ardent looks. As they passed from the room, my curiosity was excited so much that I listened at the keyhole. Papa was evidently remaining in the governess's room. I could hear a rustling of her dress as if some 17 little struggle was taking place, a sound of smothered kisses and soft expostulatory ejaculations such as, I dare not, oh no, no, not now, pray leave me, oh, oh. Then an almost perfect quiet except for a slight rustling sound and now and then broken sighs with heavy breathing. At last all was quiet, and having now been left more than half an hour to myself in the schoolroom, I ventured to tap at the door and beg Miss Birch to let me into her room. As I would never, never offend again, after a very slight delay, the door was unlocked and my governess received me with expressions of great tenderness, kissed her poor Lucille, and hoped my poor bottom was not too sore. Her eyes were melting with what I should now call a soft, voluptuous languor, and scintillated with extraordinary brilliancy, all of which set my young ideas in a flutter of wonderment as to the extraordinary cause of her prolonged emotion. 18. Things went on pretty smoothly for some time, but I found it quite impossible to avoid coming under the rod every now and then, the chastisement getting more severe on every fresh occasion. Papa always had to handle the twigs, and when I began to get older, Miss Birch would tie me up and leave the room, as she pretended to be quite unable to bear the scene. Still, Papa would always go into her sanctum at the conclusion of my whipping to talk the matter over with my governess. I will tell you of a fearful birching, the last I had before being sent to the convent school. It does not matter what the fault was, but it must have been something very serious. Papa and Miss Birch both helped to tie me up on a four-poster bed in my own room. I was stripped of everything but my skirts and drawers, which were all secured and arranged so as to expose my back parts in the best possible manner for whipping. My hands were tied to the bedpost. 19. High above my head and making me kneel on the bed, one leg was secured at the knee to the same post, my other leg being left free to kick about. Miss Birch vanished, and Papa, arming himself with a formidable rude, elegantly trimmed as usual, began by lecturing me on my fault. You impudent girl, I can scarcely believe it of you, Lucille. Now you are just upon 12, but this is the last whipping you will get at my hands, and I promise you it shall be a sound one, and then I'll pack you off to the convent with instructions to the sisters to be very strict in looking after you. Oh, oh, Papa, I implored, have mercy, don't be so severe. Indeed, I won't do it again. Hold your tongue, miss, he said impatiently. You always cry before you are hurt, but you shall remember this whipping as long as you live, giving me a slashing 20. Cut round my loins, then another and another, on each cheek of my buttocks. How do you like it, you bad girl? Will you turn over a new leaf when you leave home? Will you? Will your? Will you? Will you? Each question being accompanied by a terrific, smarter, the blows seemed to cut like a red hot knife, and my boiling blood tingled from the tips of my fingers to the ends of my toes. I could feel great burning bursting, wheels rising on my skin at every cut. I screamed and plunged till the bedpost creaked with the strain, and my wrists and knee were quite pained by the tight ligatures by which they were secured. Let this be a solemn warning to you, Miss Lucille, he continued, but I'm afraid all my efforts for your reformation are quite thrown away upon such a worthless baggage. Cutting away still more furiously, and as I turned my head to scream and implore for mercy, I could see how excited he was over the business with flushed face and 21 sparkling eyes. He was a fine, handsome man of about 45 and gave me the idea of looking as if in the midst of a tremendous battle. Anything but a bloodless battle for me. My bottom was soon dripping with the ruby, drops of my young blood, the sight of which seemed only to exasperate him still more. Ah, you little wretch, scream away, he exclaimed. It's a beautiful sight to see you writhing and plunging under every scathing cut. May it do you good and draw the imprudence out of your tail. Will you try and behave better, or shall I send you off to the convent at once in there, holiday time? There. He finished with three tremendous cuts, without waiting for my reply, and sank back, gasping for breath, into an easy chair. It was quite a minute or two before my screams and moans of agony subsided. Then Miss Birch, coming in, released my 22 hands and leg, and ordering me to rest on the bed for a while, retired with my father, locking the door behind them. The smarting sensation now turned to a delicious, voluptuous warmth as I lay under the bedclothes. My right hand was passed all over the glowing surface of my buttocks and seemed at last, quite unwittingly, to settle itself on my hairless little cunny. I turned on my belly with my hand still under me and wriggling myself about as I lay thinking over all the cuts I had received, gradually found a most pleasing sensation from the rubbing of my hand, and the two forefingers mechanically worked into the slit, squeezing my legs together. I rubbed on to increase the pleasurable emotions which I felt, driving me to strive and obtain I knew not what. The frenzy now threw me into such a state of excitement that my fingers were plunged as far as possible up my virgin cunny as I gasped, writhed, and 23 tossed my bottom up and down. The crisis came at last, and my furious efforts were rewarded by a most heavenly emission. My soul seemed to flow from me at the moment and left me in a delightful state of voluptuous lethargy, which lasted for some minutes, and when at length I regained my serenity, it was to find my fingers, cunny, and thighs all sticky from the thick spermy emission of my first maiden spend. There was also a slight stain of blood, for I had actually ravished myself in my furious excitement. I got up and sponged myself, then lay down to reflect on the curious and delicious emotions I had procured for myself, and determining to soon have a repetition of my secret's joys, fell asleep to dream of being in the arms of a most lovely boy about my own age, who seemed to impart to my ravished senses another taste of what I had already felt, awaking in a struggle to retain my 24 lovebird. I found myself bedewed by another emission, but at last I slept with tranquility, and never shall I forget my first taste of joy that day, decoration. 25. Decoration. Chapter II. The convent school. My father's extreme severity made me rather glad when, in about a week's time, Miss Birch began to make preparations for my departure to Belgium, and in less than 3 weeks I found myself installed as a pupil in the seminary of the Ursuline nuns at Brussels. The lady superior struck me from the very first as being a frightfully severe woman. The morning after 26 my arrival, she sent for me to hear her read my father's instructions, and remarked that he had given her carte blanche as to punishment, and that in their school discipline was strictly enforced. "Remember, young lady," said she in dismissing me from her presence, "we never overlook a fault, and that my word is law here." My face flushed with indignation, and tears filled my eyes as I left the apartment, fully assured in my own mind that I must soon experience a taste of their discipline, nor had I long to wait for 2 days after. Having confidentially expressed my disgust to another pupil with respect to the course fare set before us at meals, I soon found I had been talking to a telltale spy who carried everything to the superior. An elderly nun quietly told me she had been sent to conduct me to the private room of the lady superior. My time was come, and I followed my chaperone with trembling anxiety. 27. Our superior was a stern-looking woman of about 45 with dark piercing eyes and Roman nose, thin compressed lips considerably, adding to the severity of her expression. "Emdeal. Lucille," said the superior, "I thought the caution I gave you on your arrival would at least have saved you from trouble for some time and spared me the pain of inflicting personal correction on you so soon after your entry into our seminary, but I am afraid your papa must have had serious cause for wishing me to be severe with you. Now what have you been saying to your fellow pupil, the Emdeal? Olive, did you remark that the food was not fit for a dog, much less schoolgirls?" I looked down in confusion. "Ah, I see," she continued. "You cannot deny it. Well, Lucille, I hope soon to convince you that our bill of fare is both wholesome and proper for the pupils. I shall give you 12 cuts with the rod and then let you off if you promise not to offend in the same way again." 28. The nun who was called Serena now placed a long stool in the middle of the apartment and made me lie on it full length face downwards. Then I felt her cold, busy hands as they turned up my clothes and opened my drawers behind till my bottom was left, naked to the attack of the lady superior. "Do you, Emdeal? Lucille," she asked, sternly, "consider that our fare of bread and porridge 3 times a day and meat or soup 2x a week, added for dinner, is only fit for a dog? Ah, ha," she went on, cutting me slowly and severely at every few words. "This will give you a better appetite. How do you like birch sauce, Miss Dainty Mouth?" I screamed with the pain and plunged about so that Sister Serena had to hold me down with all her weight upon my shoulders. "Forgive me, oh, forgive me this time I won't speak to Olive again," I gasped out as the heavy woman almost stopped my breath, but at last it was over, and after kissing the rod and making me 29. look at the blood-stained wheels on my bottom, they sent me away with a caution. How I spoke about that or anything else I might see done in the convent. I longed to have my revenge on the deceitful Olive, but knew not where to turn for a confidant. They all perhaps would be equally treacherous. I stuck to my lessons and avoided punishment as much as possible, being assured that the longer I brooded on my revenge, the more complete it would be in the end. At the same time, I thoroughly studied every part of the building to which I was allowed access, in the hope I might some day find it very useful if I wanted to effect my escape. The nuns, I believe, slept in dormitories, where there were 12 or more together, but every pupil had a very small room to herself. Mine was in a long corridor, and Olive's 3 or 4 doors from mine there were neither locks or bolts to any door, as the lady superior and elder sisters were 30, supposed to take frequent peeps at us in our sleep. I had at last matured my plan, and having everything in readiness, one dark night when there was not even a glimpse of moonlight, I patiently watched till some of the principals had paid the accustomed visit and heard the cracked voice of an old nun say, fast asleep, as I feigned to be in a deep slumber. Soon their footsteps died away in the corridor, and after waiting some time till I felt sure every pupil must be again asleep if the going round should have awakened them, I crept out of bed, and providing myself with some pins and a strong piece of cord, was soon at the bedside of the treacherous girl I wanted to serve out. My first act was to quietly pass my cord around her outside the small bed so that I could suddenly draw it tight and secure her a helpless victim in my power. Then suddenly stuffing the bedclothes into her mouth before she could scream out, ordered her in a rough whisper to keep quiet. 31. Or I would kill her. It was too dark to see her terrified face, but she shuddered all over and seemed as if her very blood was chilled. So cold did she seem to my touch. Taking advantage of her fright, hands and feet were instantly tied so that she was spread out in a helpless fashion. I made her own handkerchief, which I happened to get hold of, into a gag, and at the same time could feel the drops of cold sweat upon her temples. Now I turned up the bedclothes, or pushed them off as I was tying the cord, till she was quite naked from the bosom downwards. My hands roved over the soft, firm, naked flesh of her belly, then to the mount of love, which I found just beginning to be fledged with silky down. My fingers sought the crack below, and I could not help amusing myself by frigging her with all my might, the 2 first fingers of my right hand ruthlessly pushing into her cunny, and I knew caused her intense pain from the slight 32 groans which the gag could not entirely suppress. What pleasure it was to me to torture her by my roughness and outrage her every sense of modesty, although I was too ignorant at the time to know that my fingers were actually taking the poor girl's virginity. A kind of fury possessed me, and I actually bit the lips of her cunny and munched off as much of the silky down as I could bite away. The pain must have been intense, and her writhing, shuddering agony was so much bliss to me. At last, to finish her off, I got a piece of the cord, and passing it right along her crack, tied it round her thighs and waist as tightly and painfully as possible, and then for ornament, stuck a lot of pins in the plum cheeks of her bottom and left them there. My revenge was complete, so wiping my fingers on the bedclothes for fear of any bloodstains, and see, I left my victim just as she was, to be tormented by her horrible 33 pains and fears till someone might find it out and release her in the morning. This outrage was never discovered. My victim was found insensible next morning and remained in a delirious state for 3 or 4 weeks before she recovered consciousness, and then the agony and terror she had endured on that awful night had so turned her brain that she believed it was the devil who had so grossly ill-used her. But I heard that one of the father confessors was strongly suspected of having committed the atrocity. The superior, with whom Olive had been a favorite, now vented her spite in every direction amongst the young lady pupils of the seminary, and I for one soon fell under her displeasure and was ordered to be tied up to their whipping post. It was only for slightly oversleeping myself and not dressing quickly when the bell rang for us to get up at 6 a.m. I was suspended by my wrists being tied high up the post as I stood upon a small 34 footstool. Then it was suddenly kicked away, the jerk of the sudden strain on my wrists almost making the straps cut into the flesh. My feet were dangling some inches from the ground. Oh, ah, ray. I screamed, how cruel. Oh, Papa, Papa, if you only knew how they are treating me in this awful place. Lady Superior, who seemed delighted at the sight of my pain, hold your foolish noise, M. Deal. Lucille, wait till you have something to scream about, girl. Then the old Serena, who it seemed was always in attendance at punishment time, pinned up my skirts and opened my drawers behind, and the Superior went on, this rod shall make all the sluggards turn out quicker in the morning. What do you think, Mademoiselle, of making us all wait prayers for 10 minutes? Will you wake up sharper in future? She gave me 3 smarting cuts at each word, and my suspended position added so 35. Much to the intensity of my pain that I screamed, kicked, and plunged about as I swung by my wrists from the post. Sister, Serena, exclaimed the Superior, keep the girl steady or I cannot plant my cuts as effectually as I ought to do upon her naughty, impudent bottom. She shan't sleep for a week if I can only make it sore enough. Serena now held me to the post with one hand to prevent my swaying about, whilst the rod rained a succession of withering, scorching cuts on my buttocks and just underneath the parting of the cheeks of my bottom. My screams were heartrending, but they only seemed to enjoy it more, and the Superior never ended her objurgations till the rod was worn out. Things now went on till I was nearly 14. We never had a holiday, and only short letters came to me from home, in which my father constantly expressed his hopes of my improvement and seemed quite oblivious to all I had written from time to time about my 36 severe treatment, and begging him to remove me to some other school. I afterwards found out that my home letters were regularly suppressed, and others more suitable were written and sent to Papa. In my name, what wretch that Superior now appears in my eyes. She not only delighted in whipping us nearly to death, but forget letters to our parents so as to keep her pupils and make everything appear couleur de rose. Perhaps, dear Rosa, you have heard that I managed to escape from that dreadful convent, but previous to that they nearly killed me. I was getting quite a big girl. My pussy already sported its silken down on the Mons Veneris, which we all consider such an ornament to our secret charms. The Superior had lately taken much notice of me and introduced me to a clique of her favorites, 3 or 4 pretty girls about my own age, who were often indulged with little treats in her private room. There we girls, 37, were encouraged and instructed in all kinds of lascivious ideas. We looked at each other's cunnies, tickled and kissed each other in every possible way, the Superior encouraging us and suggesting a variety of attitudes for us to try. She had a huge god image, about 9 inches long and very thick, which she would fit upon one of the girls and then submit herself to be fucked as hard as possible, whilst the other girls had to turn up the girl's skirts and smack her bottom hard and fast with the palms of their hands to make the young gentleman, as the Superior called her partner, work fast and vigorously. Then she would have us all strip naked, whilst we had in turn to kiss and suck her cunt when it was all slimy with her spendings. I did not mind the slapping or allowing anyone to kiss and tongue-fuck my cunny, but the Superior was so hairy and had such meaty-looking lips and a huge clitoris, 38, which I now know is induced by long-continued self-abuse, and it smelt so fishy that I absolutely declined the honor of gamma-hutching her, and nothing could induce me to do so. This so enraged her that she flew at me like a tigress. I was knocked down and beaten with a thick stick, till my flesh was bruised all over and then picked up, almost fainting, and hurried off to my own little room. Perhaps nothing further would have happened, but in my innocence, I supposed my letters were sent home just as I sealed them up, so I wrote to Miss Birch a full account of what I had been seduced into and the dreadful beating I had received for not liking the cunt of the lady superior. The very next day after I thought the letter was gone, the old nun, Serena, fetched me into a dull, gloomy room which I had never been in before, but at once rightly judged to be a punishment chamber when I saw a high 39 whipping post made of a square beam set upright in the floor, with two rings near the top on each side by which to tie up the victim. A birch rod was hanging on the wall, and two scourges with long things lay upon a seat at one end, but I had no time for further observation, as the superior seemed to follow us into the room almost immediately. "Now, M. Deal, Lucille," she exclaimed, grinding her teeth in rage, "you shall rue the insult you put upon me the other day, before my special favorites, of which I had minded to make you one, so that when you left the seminary you might look back with pleasure to the loving amusements I had first introduced you to. Perhaps I should have overlooked it all, but see, I have your letter. Ha, ha, you little fool to think that would ever go out of the convent." Sister Serena had by this time put me on a stool and was fastening my wrists one on each side of the post, and presently the stool 40 was removed, and I found myself just touching the floor with the tips of my toes. What a beautiful position! How she will twist about and scream when she feels the scourge make haste to bear her bottom, as I am burning to pay her out. "Ha, ha, M. Deal, Lucille, I fancy you wouldn't mind kissing my cunt now if I promise to let you off," said the superior spitefully. My courage and natural obstinacy came to my assistance at the moment. I was so indignant, and the idea was so repulsive to me, that I resolved rather to die than do that for her. I was frightened and yet flushed with shame and indignation at my treatment. Besides, something seemed to advise me to irritate my tormentor to do her worst and get it over quickly. "No, no, no, never. You may kill me, and then I should be out of my misery," I exclaimed. She scowled with ferocity, but said with all the calmness she could command, "Make 41. Haste, Serena, up with her clothes and open the drawers well and keep her as steady as possible." Then, taking up the instrument of punishment, I could see it consisted of 5 or 6 long thongs of whipcord, plaited and knotted at the ends, fixed on a very elastic handle. It was poised in her hand for a moment, and then brought down with stinging force on my exposed buttocks, then again and again and again in quick succession. Each cut seemed to sear the flesh as if done by a red-hot iron. My piercing screams filled the whole place, and the superior, her eyes sparkling with ferocious joy, jeered me about how I liked the scourge. "How lovely you look, M. Deal, Lucille, as you plunge and scream, and I know the intense agony of every cut. Would you rather die now, my little dear? Well, I've a good mind to kill you outright, only I want to keep you as long as that dear, kind papa of yours is willing to pay. How he must have loved his Lucille to place 42. Her with me, I'm so kind, so very kind, you know, my dear girl. What do you think of my kindness, you little love?" Her cuts were awful, and I swayed and plunged so that it was impossible for Serena to keep my body steady, so she seized the other scourge and tried her best to second the superior in her efforts to cut me up more and more. At last they fairly panted for breath, as I was left dangling, sobbing and moaning, with my clothes torn, my drawers in shreds, and streaming with blood all down my thighs and legs. Fearing I might faint, they poured a little strong cordial down my parched throat, sponged my face with cold water, and put some strong snuff up my nose, which almost drove me into convulsions, so very violent was the fit of sneezing produced. They seemed carried away with delight at the sight of my sufferings, and sprinkled a quantity of the snuff over the cuts on my 43 bottom, just to dry up the blood, as they said with a laugh. Next, all my clothes were cut or torn off till I had nothing on but slippers, stockings, and the remains of my drawers. "Now we'll finish off the obstinate, impudent little beast. I wish I dare kill her," said the superior, grinding her teeth. "Only I should lose too much. She is worth more alive than dead." A couple of ladies' riding whips were now produced, and the two women attacked me afresh. I was cut all over my body. Each cut seemed as if done with a red-hot knife. The blood flowed down my back in streams, and yet their rage seemed to increase at the sight of my sufferings. My screams were awful, but only so much music to their ears. They jeered and derided my cries for God to have mercy on me, and see, said my time was come to die, but they would make me last as long as possible and draw out my agony to the very last gasp. 44. This must all have passed in a very short time, but was an age of intense suffering to Me and the finale was such a display of ferocity that I sank under it and thus robbed them of the pleasure of prolonging my torture. The superior seized me by the hair and, drawing my head back, lashed her whip across my face and bosom, drawing more blood at every cut, whilst old Serena, not to be outdone, took my right leg under her arm, cut me dreadfully inside my thighs along the crack of my pussy, and made the tip of her whip reach the mons venerus. This was the last I could recollect, but when I came to myself, I was in my own bed, wrapped up in cloths soaked in water. No, bones were broken, and my health soon recovered sufficiently to enable me to effect my escape and avoid their further malice. 45. Decoration. Chapter III. Lucille. Marriage and Adventures. It was about 3 a.m. one fine morning when I escaped from the Ursuline convent and made my way to the Hotel d'Angleterre. The porter, in answer to my summons, was about to refuse to give me refuge when a young Englishman who was just taking his candle in the hall said he'd be damned if I should not be taken care of, and ordered the chambermaid to be called to attend on 46. Me, and added that he would be responsible for all expenses. Certainly, my lord, said the porter of the hotel, but he added sotto voce, I think he's a fool to be so easily imposed upon. I was too glad to have found a protector, especially when I found he was an aristocrat, so I quietly followed the femme de chambre, and was content to await a while for the denouement of my adventure. Breakfast was brought to me about 11 o'clock, and also a message to say that Lord Dunwich would do himself the pleasure of waiting upon me in an hour's time. You may be sure I was all impatience to see the kind fellow who had stood my friend, and was most agreeably surprised to find his manners quite equal to his appearance when I saw him again. His lordship was greatly interested by the account of my escape from the convent, and said he was a very particular friend of my betrothed husband, the Earl of Ellington, 47, and would put me under the protection of a lady going to England who would see me safe home. He was such a handsome fellow, and my gratitude was so gushing that at the moment I could have refused him no thing, and was delighted by the way he lingered over a kiss he would insist upon as his due, my whole soul seemed to leap towards the generous fellow, and tears of disappointment stood in my eyes when he was gone. I never saw him again till my wedding day 2 years later, when he was best man to my husband, and in my eyes looked a thousand times more lovable. A married couple of 16 and 28 ought to have been blessed with every happiness, but after the first 3 days of our honeymoon, the Earl's temper seemed so overbearing and imperious that I began seriously to regret my fate and looked forward to a life of gilded misery. The Earl was fond of the turf and often left me alone. 48. Whilst he spent a fortnight at Newmarket or Doncaster and York. One day I was agreeably surprised by a call from Lord Dunwich. We were living in Grosvenor Square at the time. He looked more handsome than ever, and seemed so full of sympathy for me in every respect that I could not help falling into tears and telling him all my fears, and how I was neglected for nasty, ugly, four-legged brutes of racehorses, and that in fact I was sure Lord Ellington loved his Derby favorite better than myself, and would rather I broke my neck than his pet should fall lame. Ah, Lucille, he said, falling on his knees before me, how your distress cuts me to the quick. Would to God I could comfort you in any way. I have loved you from the first moment we met, although I knew you belonged to a bosom friend, and now the wretch slights you. Look up, dear Lucille, from your tears, smile upon one who is devoted to you body and soul. And 49. Then seizing my hand, upon which he imprinted a lot of impassioned kisses, ah, you will pardon my presumptuous love, how can I help it? I was piqued by the Earl's coldness towards me, and something impelled me to pity the handsome suitor at my feet, so that although the tears were still welling from my eyes, could not help smiling and caressing his head as he looked up to my face. Darling Lucille, I may call you so now. You respond to my love. My happiness is too great, he exclaimed, drawing my unresisting body down so that our lips quickly met in a rapturous kiss of real love. I was lost, and he so rapidly took advantage of everything that, proceeding from one liberty to another in less than 10 minutes, I was an adulteress. But what a sweet sin, what transports of love shot through our souls, as we melted away again and again in the ecstasies of mutual enjoyment, how we toyed with each other's most secret charms, and 50. Promised to renew our forbidden pleasure at every convenient opportunity. Alas, for our happiness, some spy informed the Earl of my sweet liaison. He made an excuse to visit Brussels with me, and again I found myself incarcerated in a hateful convent. The kindness of my husband on our journey from England, which I afterwards found, was only a part of his most artful program. had so imposed upon my rather soft-hearted nature that I really felt sorry that I ever been unfaithful to my marriage vows, although no doubt the image of my loving paramour was firmly imprinted in my heart. We went to operas, bal masks, saw the sights, and enjoyed ourselves immensely for a few days, and being strict Catholics, he one day said jestingly, "I suppose, Lucille, we must go to confession and get absolution after having enjoyed ourselves and confess all the delightful sins we have committed." 51. By the by, be sure you do not forget to confess having ridden a St. George on your husband and allowed him to spend his seed in your hand or on your pretty bosom. They are most awful sins and will cost a pretty penny for absolution. I should not be surprised if the Rev Father undertook to inflict personal chastisement a la Gerard et Cadier, he added, laughing. But seriously, I answered, apart from joking, I know we ought to do it, and we'll go to that church in the Rue de la Madeleine this very day. I know I am a sinner, but don't like to make a laugh of such serious things. Then seating myself on his knee, I drew his face to mine and kissed him lovingly, as I added, "But dear Francis, you won't leave your little wife so long again, will you, for those horrid horses? You can't imagine how dull and low-spirited I get when left all by myself. What a pretty pouting little bride you, 52. Look, why, Lucille, the way you kiss excites me as if we were still on the honeymoon trip. But dearest," he added, "a sporting man must see his horses tried and run. Then, you know, I shall make up in the winter what you lose in the summer. There's nothing else to do then but to make love. Ha! You sweet little devil, do you want to commit another sin before confession?" My hand had been gently caressing his prick outside his breeches till it was now rampant and impatient of the restraining cloth. "Well," he went on, following my example by passing a hand up my clothes and gently tickling my clitoris with his forefinger, "we'll lump it all together, so there won't be any more to pay. My stars, Lucille, how excitable you are. You're spending on my fingers. It's nothing to blush about, little simpleton." I got off his lap and, kneeling before him, unbuttoned his flap, and the engine of love, 53, seemed to leap into my hand. Its fiery head, with the skin turned back, looked so tempting that I could not resist the temptation to kiss and caress it for a few moments. My tongue played lasciviously round the tender and excitable surface whilst my hands were fondling his finely developed balls. "Darling, darling," he ejaculated, "it's coming. Oh, I can't stop. Kiss, kiss. Suck it. Take it in your mouth, Lucille. Oh, ah, how delicious. You darling, to think you would give me so much pleasure." I was as excited as himself and sucked and swallowed his delicious spendings to the very last drop as he pressed my head down with his hands and gasped out his hands and gasped out his ejaculations of ecstasy. "Now it's my turn, sir. I mean to have a St. George as you lie on the hearthrug. Come down with you at once or I will bite it off," making him feel my teeth as I playfully took it again in my mouth. 54. We had a delightful bout on the hearthrug and I rode him till he spent into my excited cunt a third time. Keeping his cock stiff and starting him again after each spend by the contractions of the folds of my vagina, which he declared gave him the most exquisite and voluptuous sensations and that he had never experienced anything to equal it in his life, many women as he had had in his time. Presently I told him that as soon as I could get dressed I would go to confession. "Do, love," he replied, "and if the confessor is reasonable with you I will go self tomorrow or send for him to wait on me at the hotel." I left him smoking a cigar, and about an hour and a half afterwards entered the church, where I was immediately accosted by an elderly priest. "If the English lady wishes to confess the Father Francisco, in yonder box is most suitable for Madame. He knows the English ways so well and was consecrated in England." 55. I approached the box, which was in a very secluded corner of the sacred building, and kneeling on a hassock, inquired in a low voice if the Rev Father Francisco was ready to hear my confession. "Yes, my daughter, and I pray God you may have nothing but venial sins to confess," was the reply of my unseen confessor. In my innocence, I related every act of our married life, how excited we were in our love games, and the various attitudes we used to heighten our enjoyment. "Awfully sensual, my daughter. Your confessor previous to marriage must have admonished you as to the use of these unnatural postures in following the dictates of nature in your endeavors to obey the first commandment, to increase and multiply. The holy rites of matrimony ought not to be perverted by lascivious ideas and filthy sacrifices to lust. It is a most serious thing, my daughter, but before I consider what penance to exact for such sins, tell me, as 56, you value the intercession of our holy mother, have you always been faithful to your husband? If only by a look or a gesture, it is important to your salvation hereafter that you should confess it now. I was silent, dumbfounded for a moment or two. Ah, my daughter, conceal nothing. Alas, it is as I feared, conceal nothing from me, or it will be impossible for me to grant you absolution. Thus pressed and feeling but a fool. Confession would avail me with the confessor. I told him everything, and especially how sorry I felt at having allowed my peek at the Earl's neglect to have carried me into such a liaison, and that the tender regard he had lately exhibited towards me smote me to the quick for my unfaithfulness, and that was the reason I had so given way to lasciviousness with him in order to compensate by the perfect abandon of my love for any suspicions he might entertain. My daughter, I must consult our superior. 57. Yours is such a serious case, and I beg that you will go into the vestry by the door, behind this box, and wait a few minutes till I bring you his decision, said Father Francisco. I was all of a tremble, my face felt hot with blushes of shame, and I longed to hide from observation. For a few minutes so I readily went into the vestry as he had requested. It was a bare, scantily furnished room with a few chairs, a writing table covered with papers, and some priest's frocks and vestments hanging round the walls. Presently the old priest who had accosted me on my first entering the church came to conduct me to Father Francisco's room, but instead of that I found myself in the cell of a convent with the door locked behind me. The worst fears assailed my frightened mind. I sank on my knees, calling on God and my husband to release me, crying and stamping in impotent rage by turns. This must have lasted an hour or two. Then a 58. Little wicket was opened in the door, and the same old priest told me to calm myself, for Father Francisco and the superior were praying to the Holy Mother to direct them what penance to impose upon such a sinner, and that I must remain where I was till next day, when he added, no doubt you will be restored to your loving husband as pure in mind and spirit as when you first took your marriage vows. I was going to implore him to allay the Earl's anxiety on my behalf, but he assured me they had sent to his lordship to say that I was doing penance for some hours in there convent, and quickly closed the gitchet, so that I was again left alone. Decoration. 59. Decoration. Chapter IV. The penance. Two nuns supplied me with refreshment, made me up a bed on the floor, and I really had nothing to complain of as to treatment. That first night, still, something seemed to assure me that I really was a prisoner, and should not so easily get out of the convent. My hope was that the Earl would speedily insist upon my speedy release, little dreaming at the moment that he was the instigator. 60. Of my detention, and had actually acted as confessor in the assumed name of Father Francisco. My anxiety was greatly increased the next day, when hour after hour passed, and still no communication from the confessor or superior, the nuns who brought me in breakfast and dinner were silent to all my inquiries or offers of bribes if they would help me get out of the place. My watch had stopped for want of a key, but about 7 o'clock in the evening, as near as I could guess, the old priest opened the door and beckoned me to follow him. My heart suddenly recovered its courage, and I braced up my nerves to bear the severest penance. We passed along several passages, and at last, opening a door, he motioned me to enter. There, sitting before a small table which had a Bible and crucifix upon it, sat a rather young priest, about the same age as my husband, but with a close-shaven face and crown. The Earl had heavy whiskers and 61 mustache. I had never seen him otherwise, and he struck me as being very like Francis. About the nose and eyes, still no suspicion that it could really be him came into my mind. Daughter Lucille, Lady Ellington, said the seated confessor, as the other locked the door behind me, in answer to prayer, the Holy Mother has inspired us to grant you absolution only after the most severe personal chastisement and humiliations we can possibly inflict upon you. Then you will return to your confiding loving husband, purified of your adulterous sins, but for all that, he will still, and for the rest of his life, wear the horns of a cuckolded husband, which is his punishment for teaching you such lascivious ideas. It is an awful sin to so abandon yourselves to lust, and your unfaithfulness is the providential punishment he so well deserves. My face and neck were suffused with the blushes of burning shame as my eyes fell beneath his ardent gaze. Beside something, 62 instinctively told me that both Father Francisco and his coadjutor were enjoying the sight of my confusion. Now please divest yourself of everything you have on, except corset, chemise, and drawers, whilst I prepare this scourger for the chastisement of your wicked sensual flesh, and my brother here will get that rope in order ready to tie up your hands above your head. I scarcely knew how I got my dress and skirts off as my hands trembled so, and the idea of stripping before two men, even if they were priests, was so distressing to my sense of modesty, but somehow or other, I was soon standing up with my skirts on the floor about my heels and my last under, petticoat tucked up under my corset. Father Francisco confronted me, scourge in hand and pointing with his finger to my drawers in front, roughly ordered me to open them and show where I had admitted my lover when in the act of committing adultery. 63. Open it, you wicked woman, I must see, the seat of lust itself. He flourished his scourge so and gave me two such terrible cuts round my buttocks that I was compelled to obey his immodest and shameful order, and the moment I had done so, he produced a pair of scissors and denuded me of nearly all the dark, silky chevelure I took such delight in viewing in the glass whenever I dressed myself or just got out of my morning bath. I suppose you were so excited and wanton when Lord Dunwich embraced you that you showed him everything, even your nakedness, as the Bible calls it. Did you blush then, as you pretend to do now, Lucille? He asked, my surprise and indignation almost choked me so that I was unable to speak, and he gave me a heavy slap with his hand on my bottom, saying, so you will not answer, and think I am behaving shamefully, do you? It's nothing to what you will have to submit. 64. To presently, Lady Ellington, turn round and open your legs and stoop forward this instant, or I will flog the very life out of you. His rude hand was passed under my bottom, between my legs, and as I covered my face with my hands, I could feel his fingers invade every secret spot in turn, even to forcing a digit up the fundamental orifice, which is always so tight and difficult of entrance, saying as he did so, did you let him go there, or has your husband ever sodomized your bumhole? Ha, ha, how modest we are now. Speak, say if you ever allowed anyone to put his prick in your arse. I cannot recollect all he said or questioned me about, but his words and actions were every moment more and more coarse and obscene, on purpose to add to my humiliation. Here, Father Anthony, he continued, addressing the old priest, where is your godimage? That's the thing to draw all the 65 wantonness out of her lustful body. It is well furnished with good stiff bristles, Father Anthony. It's a new one. Same as we always keep in stock to subdue the fleshly lusts of these lascivious female sinners, and never used before, but I must tie her up. The rope, which hung from a pulley in the ceiling, was tied tightly round my wrists, bringing both hands together, then he pulled it as hard as possible till I could barely touch the floor with my feet, and all my weight was upon my arms and the muscles of my back. That's it exactly, chuckled Francisco. Now, my dear Lucille, Lady Ellington, I ought to say you will really enjoy the insertion of this jolly dildo up your cunt, and it is full of a delightful injection with which it will spend in response to your emission of pleasure. Ah, no, no, oh, pray don't treat me with such brutality, I screamed in horror when I saw the huge red-headed thing with 66. Its shaft springing from a bed of bristles, fixed round the balls so as to prick the cunt at every insertion, besides its length and thickness, seemed quite terrible to contemplate. I am quite content to submit to your penance of scourging and whipping, but oh, oh, have mercy and put that thing out of my sight, Father Francisco. Look, you need not be so frightened. I shall lubricate it well with perfumed oil to make it enter you easily. Besides, I will put some on your cunt and bottom, suiting his actions to his word and oiling my privates profusely, especially my bottom hole, which he lubricated till he could easily work two fingers in at once. It was dreadfully disgusting, but still his frigging my bottom was rather exciting, and he could tell or guess my feelings as he went on to say, I see you like it, but the dildo will make you plunge and spend with delight. He then took up my legs, one under each arm, and stood between them, so they were 67, wide apart, and Father Anthony, his face plainly showing how he delighted in the task, proceed to force his godimage into me, opening the lips of my cunt with his fingers, till the head was fairly in, then ruthlessly shove, 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 till ah, ah, oh, ah, r, ray, I screamed in dreadful pain as the sharp bristles ran into the tender surroundings of my pussy. Ah, ah, oh, my God, I screamed, plunging and writhing. In my agony, his eyes glared into mine with a fiendish delight, only equaled by the look of his companion, who held my legs like a vice and encouraged him to fuck the wanton woman till she had had enough to keep her out of adultery for a long time to come. Presently, Father Francisco, digging his nails into the flesh of my legs, said excitedly, see, see, she's coming. The gluey spend is glistening on your dildo. Now, now, shoot it into her, let her enjoy it. In a moment, I felt the hot gush of the contents of the godimage. It rather relieved me. 68. for a moment or two, but oh, oh, my dear, even after this long lapse of time, I can never forget the agony of that moment. The whole of my body seemed filled with liquid fire, for they had filled the dildo with some infernal decoction on purpose to ruin my health and destroy all chance of my ever enjoying the sweets of love again. Such I know was their intent, for they taunted me with it at the time, but although I never quite recovered from the shock to my system and feel even now that it was the original cause of my premature decay, they did not succeed in depriving me of all sensual desire or feelings for the future. I fainted, but they never let me down, and when at last I began to recover consciousness, Father Francisco was using his scourge most unmercifully on my buttocks, the drawers being open and the naked flesh exposed to every cut. "I thought this would bring her round," exclaimed he. "See, Father Anthony, her, 69. Eyes are opening, it will soon make her forget. The dildo fucking, she did enjoy that, did she not, Anthony? But she'll be a long time before she has such pleasure again. Ha, 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 how lovely she is getting, see her, wriggle from the pain of every cut. Ah, Lucille. Dear Lady Ellington, what intense delight. The sight of your agony is to us." By this time, either he was tired, or he thought a little respite would enable me to bear more presently, so dropping the scourge on the floor, he left me still suspended, whilst himself and assistant sat down and gloated over the sight of my suspended figure and blood-stained bottom with their hands under their frocks, and I verily believe now they were frigging themselves. After about 10 minutes, Father Francisco again approached, scourge in hand, whilst the elder priest gave me a few drops of cordial and held some pungent salts under my nose to refresh me a little. "That will do," said the former. "Stand back, Father Anthony. Now, 70. Now, you wicked, wanton, lustful young woman, did you wish your husband dead when having connection with Lord Dunwich? Why don't you answer? Were his parts more pleasing to your sensuality? Is he better furnished than your husband? Speak up, confess all. Your wickedness? Did no sense of shame shock you in the midst of your enjoyment with that fellow, eh?" Every question brought a scathing cut with it, breaking the wheels and drawing fresh blood at every stroke, but I really was so ashamed. I knew not how to answer, and my tongue was useless except for moans or cries of pain, and notwithstanding all their degrading and cruel treatment, I felt it was fully deserved by me. "Won't you speak? Won't you confess your sorrow for your sin?" he continued. "Are you really so lost to all sense of shame as to be hardened against repentance? This must be whipped, yes, whipped out of you, even if it nearly costs your life. 71. Just then Father Anthony loosed the rope a little so that I could shrink further from the blows of the scourge till I was driven up to the wall, where I stood on tiptoe with my hands drawn up over my head and my back, bending as much as possible to avoid the terrible shower of blows with which he was cutting up my buttocks still more and more. Crimson with shame, tears flowing in torrents from my starting eyes, I moaned, cried, and implored for mercy, protesting in a broken voice that ever since my husband had renewed his kindness to me, I had been very, very sad and ashamed of myself for what I had done, and only his former neglect had caused me to throw myself into the arms of a handsome man to whom I was under great obligations for protecting me when I escaped from the Ursuline convent. "Ha, then, you are that Lucille who insulted Lady Superior. I heard all about it at the time," he went on furiously. "Now you shall be punished for that too," seizing my left, 72, leg and lifting it up so that he could cut freely under my thighs, on my sore cunny, and every tenderest spot he could think of, whilst old Father Anthony was rubbing his hands in delight at the sight. My agony was so intense that I could only gasp and sigh. Strength I had none, he seemed beside himself with rage, but at last dropped his scourge and throwing open his frock in front, I could feel his rampant pego thrusting towards my mount, and am sure he spent on my drawers outside before he could get into me. This he soon effected, and taking my buttocks up in his strong embrace, he fucked furiously, swaying me about with my arms still tied up by the rope, but I forgot all that. His motions within me took away all feeling of pain, and I believe, much as I loathed him and felt humiliated by all his dreadful treatment, that I actually spent copiously when I felt his hot sperm shooting into and soothing my overheated cunt. He was so overcome that Father Anthony, 73, seeing he was about to fall, released me, or loosened the rope so that we sank down together on the floor and laid almost motionless for a few minutes, till the old priest, taking up a scourge, began to whip us both unmercifully and made Francisco get up. This was the end for that time, but I was ordered to prepare for a final penance in a day or two's time. Decoration. 74. Decoration. Chapter V. The last scene in denouement. They kept me in the same chamber where I had been so outraged, the two nuns nursing, bathing my bruises, and using soothing injections to allay the inflammations of my privates, till on the third day they said I was so far recovered that my confessors might finish the prescribed penance, adding with a malicious smile, "We saw everything last time, and so we shall now through our peepholes." 75. How delicious the sight was last time, and we had such frigging and dildo fucks after it was all over. Having said this, they speedily disappeared, and I was left to await my fate in trembling anxiety. I was hot and cold by turns as the recollection of all the humiliating and painful incidents of the other day came back so vividly. To my mind and in imagination, I seemed to suffer all my tortures over again. This did not last long, although you may be sure it seemed long enough to me in my state of apprehension. A key was turned in, the lock and the door creaked on its hinges, my persecuting confessors again stood before me in reality with quite a sardonic expression of anticipated pleasure on their faces. No trace of pity could I find on either visage, nothing but gloating sensuality seemed to animate the ardent looks with which they regarded me for some moments. The hateful Francisco was the first to address me, a smile of terrible meaning playing. 76. Round his mouth, showing his pearly white teeth to such perfection that I was again strongly reminded of my husband. Lady Ellington, I hope, has had good time for reflection upon the heinousness of her sins, particularly those in contravention of her marriage vows. Wantonness is as nothing compared to that. What has the penitent Lucille to say? Has her chastisement made her feel the pangs of real remorse? He said, whisking a scourge before my face. I was too frightened to speak. Face, neck, and bosom, I could feel, were in a burning heat, whilst my eyes could not meet his, for something more than shame instinctively told me what I might have to suffer at his hands. No sign of repentance here, Father Anthony. She must be stripped naked at once. Do you hear, Lucille? Strip, strip, strip at once, or it will be much the worse for you, he said with rough ferocity. Both priests helped me to undress, and in their impetuous haste almost tore the clothes. 77. Off my back, at the same time taking all sorts of disgusting liberties and keeping me in a continued state of confusion, at last, when nothing was left but my chemise to remove, they suddenly tied the rope round my left ankle, and in an instant I found myself suspended, head downwards, with the right leg kicking in the air and screaming piteously for mercy. "Secure her wrists to the rings in the floor," said Francisco, "and then help me to whip the seat of lust till she is a little more repentant." The elder priest speedily effected this, and then both of them with scourges commenced to whip me most mercilessly, aiming their relentless cuts between my legs so as to cut the lips of my cunt and round my bottom hole. At every blow, now and then the cruel thongs would wind round the upper part of my thighs or onto my mount. My cries were heartrending as each blow seemed to reopen all my old cuts and bruises. Ah, ah, ar, ar, re, 78. Oh, oh, will you never have pity and believe me sorry for my faults? I screamed, or moaned, and gasped out the words in intense agony. So you begin to repent a little under the lash, do you, Lucille? Are you really sorry for having wronged Lord Ellington? Is it your mind or your cunt that is most filled with remorse? How you seem to writhe, and how prettily we are making it look for you. The trickling blood is delightful to see as it flows in drops and rills over your back and belly. His questions were spoken slowly, as he seemed to enjoy the pleasure of my intense suffering, and two or three of his cuts were over the tender surface of my belly or right across the navel. "Scream away, you sensual woman. Why don't you implore the Holy Virgin to have pity and forgive you? We are only carrying out her commands, are we not, Father Francisco?" hissed out old Anthony as he continued to scourge my back and sides, and 79. Every now and then aimed a fearful blow right down my lacerated cunny. Again they would stop for a little and ask me jeeringly about my feeling of remorse. Would I indulge in such obscenity with my husband again, or keep from adultery in future? I was almost too far gone to do more than moan, and Father Anthony suggested that I ought to be well lashed over my neck, shoulders, and bosom to make me speak out, but the other, seeing how exhausted I really was, restrained his mad fury, and then after waiting, a little one of them would give me a terrible cut and ask the other to see the beautiful effects of it as I swayed about in agony. This was done again and again, till after a time the scourges were thrown aside and the rope being lowered, I was allowed to lay on the floor for a little while, and some cordial was again administered to refresh me. My tormentors, sitting down and frigging themselves openly before my face till in the act of spending, they would stand over me so that I might, 80, be thoroughly humiliated by having all their spendings drop on my face, neck, or head, as I was still secured to the floor by my wrists. Presently, at a sign from Francisco, his companion hoisted me up by the ankle again, and did it so tightly that I was frightfully stretched by my arms and leg, which were drawn as painfully tight as he could make it, the fastenings cutting into the flesh so that I bear the marks to this very day I could see. That Francisco was again preparing his god image with oil, but he did not put any upon my person. Horrified at the sight, I begged and implored them in the most piteous manner not to degrade me again with that disgusting instrument, promising to pay the church any amount for absolution rather than endure it again. Too late, your repentance is not sincere. Besides, the other day we saw with our eyes how your lascivious nature responded to the thrusts of this thing in your cunt. 81. Now I am going to degrade your bottom hole by inserting it there, however painful the operation may prove, saying which he seized and held my left leg under his arm and standing close to my body at once proceeded to carry out his infernal idea of ravishing my anus. Lacerated, bleeding, and sore as my bottom was at the least touch, and regardless of my piercing shrieks, he forced the oily head of the India rubber thing quite into my tightly contracted bum hole. The pain was intense, as it seemed to rend the lining tissue of the anal canal in its passage and the bristles. Round its root added, if possible, still more to the intensity of my suffering. I believe that giving one long shriek of agony, I lost consciousness for a time, but only to awake and find them laughing and jeering at my sufferings as the one worked his dildo in my bottom, whilst the other had thrust two or three fingers up my blood-stained and wounded cunt. It is quite indescribable what I felt at this outrage, the accumulation. 82. Of shame, agony, and horror so overpowered my exhausted nature that I went off again into such a death-like swoon that they really feared I was dead and made haste to let me down as well as apply strong restoratives. My hands were still retained in the rings on the floor and the godimich was left sticking in my bottom, the spasmodic contractions of the sphincter muscle holding it as in a vice, whilst the pulsations of the violated passage behind were still awfully painful. All this was apparent to me as I slowly came to myself once more and could see the excited looks of my cruel confessors, who proceeded to sprinkle me with cold water and use a large sponge for the purpose of both refreshing me and allowing them to gloat over the extent of my hurts. This lasted a little while, then I was made to get up on my hands and knees facing Francisco, who then opened his frock so as to show me the excited state of his prick, at the same time with a malicious look of fiendish 3 joy, he asked me if I should not like to suck such a delightful sweetmeat. Then, seeing my look of intense disgust, he burst into a rage, saying, "Oh, so you mean to insult me as you did the lady superior of the Ursulines, do you, Lucille? You may think I am disgusting and nasty, or I smell strong, as she did, and I may tell you to make you relish it still more that scarcely an hour ago it was up the strong-smelling cunt of that very same lady, and I was careful not to wash so that you might have the full benefit of the delicious aroma of her spendings." Speechless with disgust and helpless in every way, it was useless for me to appeal for mercy or consideration from two such heartless beings. The only thing I could do was to close my eyes to the awful sight, but only for a moment. A tremendous whack from Father Anthony, who had taken up the scourge, made me shriek out again, "Ah, ah, oh, will you never finish me off and kill me in mercy?" The only answer I had was a 84 quick repetition of the blow, whilst the repulsive Francisco's right hand, clutching my hair, pulled my head up and drew it back so painfully that I gasped for breath. This was exactly what he wanted, and in a moment, his prick was forced into my mouth. The sensation was so repulsive, horrible, and choking all at once that I had not the presence of mind to bite, or he would have repented the act ever after. Old Anthony was cutting my back, bottom, thighs, and loins, even the calves of my legs, not escaping his frenzied scourging. Blood was streaming over my flesh and dripping to the floor in little pools, and I felt I was really dying at last. Just then, the excited Francisco shot a deluge of hot sperm into my mouth and throat. I was choked, and remember no more except that on recovering consciousness, the supposed confessor, Francisco, was dressed as a gentleman, and I immediately recognized him as my husband, as at the same instant he exclaimed, "Woman, my revenge is complete. You won't, 85, deceive me again. How I have reveled in degrading, humiliating, and torturing my adulterous wife. You'll never see me more. This has been my way of divorcing myself from a faithless bitch." He was gone before I could find words to reply, but my sense of pain was instantly drowned in a deep desire for vengeance for this outrage, and its impulse so strengthened me that I was soon well enough to travel. My lover, Lord Dunwich, received me with open arms and declared he would shoot or be shot by the Earl ere 48 hours had elapsed, at once dispatching a friend with his cartel to arrange a meeting for the next morning. In Hyde Park at the dawn of day, we spent the night together at his hotel, although scarcely 14 days since I was so fearfully outraged, how we fucked all night and swam in sensual pleasures for hours. I would deny him nothing, was he not my champion who was going to risk his life in the morning to avenge my fearful wrongs and, 86, to make him still more earnest in his desire for vengeance, I stripped naked, let him examine every part where the marks of the bruises and lacerations were still visible. My cunt, he sucked, kissed, and fucked till I was beside myself with excitement, and he was also ready for anything than my poor bumhole attracted his attention. He kissed and put his tongue into it till I was eager to have him there, and begged he would put his prick in gently at first, for fear of hurting me too much. This was a heavenly finish to our night of love. We swam in delight. Never before or since have I tasted voluptuous joy to equal that in Kool-Aid. Next morning, dressed as a young gentleman with a false mustache, I went as one of his seconds to the fatal place of meeting, and had the satisfaction of seeing my wrongs avenged by a ball through the heart of my hated husband. We then went abroad for a while, but my dear lover lost his life by drowning in the Rhine, since which I have consoled myself, 87, as you know, by all sorts of erotic fancies, especially flagellation, and now, dear Rosa, at the early age of 25, I find myself fast fading away. Finney's transcriber's note. Perhaps as a corollary of the private printing, the typesetting of the original book was of indifferent quality. Numerous typographical errors have been corrected. Period spelling has been retained. Inconsistent hyphenation, bed post, tight, fitting, has been left as printed in the original. End of the project. GUTMBRG, EBOOK, the convent school, or early EXBRINCS of a young flagellant asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed, creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works. So the foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the Project GUTMBRGTM concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property trademark copyright agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8. 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1c below, there are a lot of things you can do with project. Gutenberg Electronic Works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. See paragraph 1e below, 1c. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation, or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1d. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1e. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1e1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work, on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1e2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must at no additional cost, fee, or expense To the user, provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original, plain, vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9, 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that s/he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you received the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you received the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1. F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth. In paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you, as is, with no other WRNTAS of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to WRNTAS of MERC Chanti BLITY or fitness for any purpose. 1. F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1. F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone. Providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur. A distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work, b. alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and c. any defect you cause, section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN or federal tax identification number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact, Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the project. Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.